Hello and welcome to the PLYMC's Library Anywhere podcast, where we discuss books, programs, and all things library related in Youngstown and Mahoning County.
Hi everyone, I'm Ashley.
And I'm Ashley.
And we're here with the killer edition of the Library Anywhere podcast. Our guest reader today is Lindsay, amateur sleuth, true crime enthusiast, and librarian from the Michael Kusalaba Library. We cannot even start this conversation without also mentioning that Lindsay is the all-time reigning champ of best dog petters in the world. Woo-hoo! Thanks for being here, Lindsay, and please tell everyone a little bit about your dog, Simon.
Oh, that is the best question you could ask me. Oh, I love that you asked me that. Thank you for bringing him up. We'll be thrilled. Simon is my best friend. He's a white, brown, and black Shar Pei Basset Hound. He's a hound dog, and he's a big boy. He's about 70 pounds or so, but he identifies as a small dog, a lap dog. Oh.
So, 70 pounds of love.
Yeah, so he's a good boy.
I feel like it's important to note that I have not one, not two, but three pictures of Simon on my bulletin board at work.
I have a couple too.
Yeah, he's the goodest boy.
He's so photogenic.
He's a good boy.
The best boy, and he loves pets, and he's the squishiest.
He is. He's got lots of extra skin.
Yeah, okay. I guess enough love for Simon. Let's get into it. We always start with what we're currently reading. Ashley, do you want to start us off this time?
Sure. So typical me, I chose a book that I could read that goes with a podcast. Mm. So this is one of the cases we are going to discuss on here today. It's an old book. I think it was written in 2006. It's called Amy, My Search for Her Killer, and it's by James Renner. I guess this would be considered a memoir as it delves into his investigation and trying to solve the case. He does feel or have like this personal connection to Amy Mihaljevic, as they were the same age, and he lived in Rocky River, not very far from Bay Village, from where she disappeared. He is a Cleveland journalist, and he wants his investigation to make the cover for the Cleveland Scene magazine that he freelances for.
Oh.
So he, there's a lot of interviews. He spoke to like the lead detective that has been on the case since she disappeared in 1989. Also like her brother, two of her closest friends, the detective that was at the scene when they discovered her body. Also, Amy was taking horseback riding lessons at the time, and he visited Holly Hill Farms multiple times and spoke to the owner. So I guess I would say none of the interviews lead to any groundbreaking information. The interviews provide a bit more information than what I watched like on a documentary. I'm still in the process of reading this, and he does say that he will interview Amy's father last. James wants to get through all the other interviews and see if anything strikes Amy's dad as different or something stands out that never did before. Mm. So I'm interested to see how that will go.
Wow.
That was so thorough and well thought out.
That's just how I am, I guess.
Digging deep
the
already.
Investigator
yeah,
in me.
I feel like I need to take a step back. So.
Well, no pressure, Lindsay. Do you want to tell us what you're reading?
Well, just to be clear, first of all, you're the one who brought up Simon, so
I will always bring up Simon.
I am currently reading Simon Sort of Says by Aaron Bow. Oh. I don't know if you say, I don't know if it's Bow or Bow, but
but
it's a juvenile fiction book, and it's about a seventh grade boy named Simon who has anxiety and moves from his hometown. Well, him and his family, supposedly they were kicked out of their hometown. I'm not entirely sure yet because I haven't gotten all the way through it, but they were kicked out of their hometown and they had to move to a national quiet zone that doesn't have internet. He befriends a girl that has autism, and then they begin training a service dog, and then we find out that his anxiety is actually because he was the sole survivor of a school shooting in his town.
Oh my
god. Oh wow, that's heavy.
So I'm listening e-audiobook on Libby.
Oh wow.
I came across it because I just went into Libby when me and Simon were walking, and I
Do you try to look for books with Simon in the title?
So this time in particular I did. I told him, I said, let me Google your name in Libby and see what comes up.
Yeah.
I think that won some awards though, didn't it?
It did. Was it a Newbery honor?
Yeah.
It may have been.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's what came up, and I like juvenile fiction, plus I like e-audiobooks are my favorite because I can read them while I'm walking him. So that's how I ended up reading that, and I like the cover too.
Aww. So. What a novel idea, just an area, like a village that has no internet access.
Yeah.
So, like, nobody, you can't get on, for even for, like, school or research, like, not even, like, at the library?
I don't think so. At least not that I've encountered yet. Like I said, I'm not quite through it. I think I'm on chapter 9, but for a juvenile fiction book, that's not very far, so.
Wow. Interesting.
Yep.
It is.
Okay, well, I am reading Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus.
Oh, yay! We've talked about this for a while.
We've talked about this for a while, and yeah. I'm always so late to read popular books. Like, I can't ever read them when they're really trending and there's holds on them, because it makes me nervous to know that people are waiting for a book that I have, and I'm, like, not reading it fast enough. So a coworker has been recommending this one for a while, and I really want to watch the series with Brie Larson, but I refuse to watch it before I've read the book.
Got to read the book first.
So I'm sure everybody kind of knows what this is about, but if anyone's been living under a rock, it's a historical fiction novel set in the 1960s, centering on a chemist named Elizabeth Zott. She refuses to play by anyone's rules and ends up getting fired from her job, basically because sexism. She ends up hosting a televised cooking show that sort of revolutionizes many women with her wit, intelligence, and no-nonsense approach to cooking and life and being a woman in the 60s. I'm really enjoying it so far. I think it's actually totally worth the hype that it received in the past few years. But wildly, I just saw that it was apparently rejected 98 times before Doubleday published it.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that wild?
And now look how successful
it is. Yeah, so let that be your little reminder. Don't give up on your dreams just because 98 people tell you that you're not good enough.
Yeah.
All right, so Lindsay, you did say you like to listen to audiobooks. That's your top choice?
That is my top choice, yep. E-audiobooks specifically. So I can, I don't have to.
Because you don't want to lug around
a Walkman.
A Walkman and
or like a physical book.
Yeah, you know. Or 6 CDs or 20 CDs in my back pocket. So yeah, the e-audiobooks are fantastic.
Well, in addition to a great collection on e-audio, we also have those cute little playaways that, you know, could fit in your pocket and they're very lightweight. For some people who are maybe intimidated by the digital content, those are available and a lot less clunky than the books on CD, which we still carry because a lot of people still use them. Any other formats you like to read sometimes? Not your top choice, but what else do you do?
I would do ebook second. I would do an ebook second. Yeah, I like having it available and small and contained. And if I don't like it, I can immediately return it and pick something else. So I don't have to wait. I don't have to go anywhere.
Yes.
So that's the convenience.
True. It's actually embarrassing because I work at a library and I come here every day and I always have books overdue. Like, for some reason, it's so hard for me to bring them with me. So I do. I love e-format too. And I do, like, I love, like, the feeling of holding a book and, like, the act of sitting down with a book. Mm-hmm. But I tend to read so much more on my phone. It's just so handy.
So you guys read on your phones?
Yeah. I have a Kindle too, but I just, it's so much easier to just have my phone. And if I'm in like a waiting room or even in line at Target or something, and I could just pull it out and read it for 10 minutes and I'm making progress on it.
Yeah. I haven't gotten used to it with on my phone.
You're a classic book in hand.
Yes.
But I also feel
more
like
you're like on my iPad or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like you would be way more like, okay, I'm sitting down to read this book, like versus just like popping it open and reading like a single chapter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes I'm kind of chaotic and I read like a couple sentences and close it and like, okay, I guess I'm doing something else now. And that's just a little picture into how our brains work.
Okay, so do you stick to a single genre or do you like variety?
I try to do variety. I really try, but I usually fail. My top two that I always go back to, juvenile fiction. I love juvenile fiction.
Oh, I love that you like juvenile fiction.
I know not too many people can say that, right?
Yeah.
As an adult. I don't know why.
I just think they're well done, though.
They really are, especially if they're a mystery or something, because it's like the mysteries are so easygoing. And then my other one is cozy mysteries, but specifically culinary cozy mysteries.
Okay, so who's your favorite author who writes?
You know, I don't know that I have a favorite one. Mm-hmm. I do. There's a couple that are really good. I definitely like the Joanne Fluke ones because there's so many of them. And she's always coming out with a new one.
Are they fun?
They're kind of fun.
Yeah.
I always like the titles of them.
Yes.
Yeah. And, the covers. I'm like, that looks tasty, that pie or cake on there.
They're kind of like fantasy books to me because I can't cook. So I think that's why I like them. So I envy the people. And I think that's why, because it's not realistic fiction to me. It's really like, wow, those people can do that stuff. So I think that's why I like them. I don't know.
Are you hungry all the time reading them? Like, I can't even hear somebody talk about food without deciding I need to eat it immediately.
If you look at the recipes, the amount of different things, the effort you'd have to put into it, I'm like, nah, never mind.
I'd be ordering takeout, like, for sure, to get whatever they're cooking, though. Yeah. Okay, well, because Lindsay mentioned cozy mysteries, and I love a punny title. I just love the titles that come out. The cozy mysteries come out with the best titles. They're always, like, silly and a play on something. We took a moment, and I made them pull some up on their phones so that we could all share some of these punny cozy mystery titles. So, Lindsay, give us a few that you found.
Okay, so these are Jen McKinley from her Cupcake Bakery Mystery series, which I absolutely love. So these ones are probably the best ones that I found in this series. There's Fondant Fumble, Strawberried Alive, Pumpkin Spice Peril, Vanilla Beaned, Sugar and Iced, Going, Going, Ganache.
Oh.
All very good books.
Oh, wow.
I don't know about that. I don't know about Fondant Fumble. I don't think I've read that one yet.
Uh-oh, so. Add it to the list. Yeah, TBR.
Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah, it comes out this year. So
oh, wow. See? Ashley, what'd you find?
I found a couple. Death by Food Truck.
Oh.
And Baking Bad.
Ooh, I like that one. Okay, here's a few. Game of Cones. This is an ice cream parlor mystery. Another one, Bites the Crust.
Oh, I love that.
Paw and Order. It's a dog mystery. And then I found another list that was called The 13 Most Ridiculous Cozy Mystery Titles. So there's The Seven Deadly Zins. It's a wine mystery.
Wow.
Drowned Under. So it's like an Australia setting.
Like Down Under.
Okay.
Thread on Arrival.
Oh,
that's a good one. Good. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Strangled Eggs and Ham. Is that like green eggs and ham?
That's hilarious.
Peach Clobbered.
That one might be the best.
Not on her life, but KN, like I think it's like a crochet. Okay, so those are just some fun ones. Okay, Lindsay, you mentioned that you liked reading Cozy Mysteries and Jen McKinley. Any other favorite titles or authors you'd like to shout out, whether they're something you've read currently or even something from your childhood?
Some of my favorite children's books were the Amelia Bedelia book.
Oh, those are funny. Talk about puns.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if it was the first one in the series, but I remember having the one where she cleaned the house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was,
is that the original?
You know, I'm not sure.
With
but
where she changes the towels and she cuts the towels.
Yeah, I think she's so literal.
That was one of my favorites as a kid. Mm-hmm. I also liked In a Dark, Dark Room by Alvin Schwartz. Particularly the one where the head falls off the girl.
Yes! Green Ribbon. That was one of my favorites, too.
Oh,
I don't
my
remember
gosh.
Any of the other book, but I remember that.
I remember Jenny. Being, like, horrified that this was, like, realistic.
Yeah.
As a kid, like, this could happen.
And that may be where the true crime...
Perhaps.
I don't know.
Yes,
might be where you guys fell in love with it and where I was, like, horrified and never wanted to go anywhere near it. All right, and we've had the opportunity at the library to meet some really cool authors who have come for programs or special author events. Have you had the chance to meet anyone you've really liked? Anything memorable from meeting some of these authors?
I've met quite a few, both here and at different conferences and things. I'd say my number one meet was with Ashley to my left. Was Sarah Shepherd, who wrote the Pretty Little Liars books. It was a couple of years ago. We did a coffee bar and
it was
we did
coffee
a bunch of games and
like trivia.
And,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
It was really
cool. Fun to collaborate.
Yeah.
And then we got to meet Sarah Shepherd and go to dinner.
Yeah, we went to dinner.
Oh, you went to dinner with her.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we did.
I feel like I need to know where you guys went.
Springfield Grill?
It was.
Oh, yeah. Good choice.
Yeah, so we did have dinner with her.
What'd you guys eat?
Definitely. I don't remember.
Oh, probably the Zing Chicken. That's what I get every time I go there.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea.
Tell me more about Sarah Shepherd.
Okay.
I'm hungry.
she was really cool.
She was.
The last day of the series, of the TV series of Pretty Little Liars,
mm-hmm.
the absolute grand finale,
she was
actually here, so she wasn't watching it on TV. She was here doing,
timing. Wow. Mm-hmm. Go library.
We wanted to do like a program centered around Pretty Little Liars
mm-hmm.
with it wrapping up. And then we were like, well, maybe if we got Sarah Shepherd to come for the program.
And she came.
And we thought we had found something that said she lived in Arizona or something like that, or New Mexico. And we were like, she's not going to come. And then we talked to her. She's like, oh, well, I'll just drive over. I live in Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she just drove over.
Mm-hmm.
And, spent the day here and definitely fangirl moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She was fantastic. She was very down to earth, really cool.
Oh.
very fun. And then I would say my next one would be Amanda Flower, who's actually a local author.
I was wondering if she's local.
She lives somewhere in Ohio, but she writes Amish cozy mm-hmm. mysteries. She writes other stuff too, but that's what I read of hers. And I met her at, I think it was OLC maybe. She did a library conference. Yeah, library conference.
Okay.
I think that was the one, but she was really, really good. She did a presentation, and she mm-hmm. was really interesting to listen to. And I know sometimes she visits some of the branches.
Yeah,
too.
I think she was at Sebring.
Yeah, I think she was. Okay. So, mm-hmm. so yeah.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Love an author who is also a library user.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Go libraries. That's awesome. All right, guys, I know you are dying to talk about all things true crime, but you'll have to lay out some of the details for me because I am not well-versed in any of it. Are there, like, specific cases you guys are interested in? Or tell me what it means to be, like, a true crime enthusiast.
So I think we have some favorites, definitely. Right, that we've followed over the years.
Definitely, yes.
So when did you become interested in true crime, Lindsay?
So I remember being young and watching Unsolved Mysteries and just being terrified but also intrigued because it was so interesting. I couldn't even tell you how old I was. I just remember watching it in the dark, no parents.
In the dark?
Yeah, in the dark with no parents home.
We are not the same people.
Robert Stack was yes. so creepy.
It was all
But you were, I don't know, in a trance watching him though.
Yeah, I think that's probably where it started, and then I just kind of went on to watch true crime documentaries and mm-hmm. things like that. I don't read true crime. I think there's something about, I don't know if it's the voice or just
the visuals
that I've read some true crime, but it's mm-hmm. always disappointing.
So yeah, and it's kind of hard to follow too, especially like the book that I'm reading right now, just with all like the different interviews.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd say it started there, and then Ashley to my left, we used to have lunches when we worked together at Main Library, and every lunch period we would sit and we would just talk about true crime in a little like office
yeah, try space to solve like all the crimes, you know.
Not weird.
We're
at
still
all.
Hoping that we can solve some.
Yeah, if we solve one today, then I think that we can go on sabbatical over two.
Yeah. Well, my story is pretty similar to yours. But there are some cases that stick with you, almost haunt you. And I think what intrigues me the most is the unknown. Like, what really happened? Who did it? I come up with, like, scenarios in my head. So one that we have followed for a long time is Maura Murray.
Yeah, it's one of my white whales.
So what is a white whale? Should I know this phrase?
Maybe it's the wrong phrase. Maybe I'm saying the right wrong thing. Well, now I'm questioning myself.
An objective that is relentlessly or obsessively pursued, but difficult to achieve. You did it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
totally.
I just never heard of that.
Totally
okay,
on
cool.
spot. I hadn't
so
heard of it either.
Your white whale. Oh.
It is one of my white whales now that we've made sure that I'm using the right term.
Does it drive you crazy, just like side note, that you'll never know the answer to some of these? Because I feel like it's so unsatisfying.
It is. And hopefully, like, one day we will find out. Like,
yeah.
I'm holding out hope that some of these cases
and justice
will get solved.
Needs to be served.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
All right, go ahead. Tell me about the case. Yeah. Sorry, I'm so distracted about this.
That's okay. You might become addicted after.
Oh gosh.
This one's really good.
It is.
I think the first time I saw this one, it was on Disappeared.
So did I.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so this is the most baffling disappearance case ever.
Definitely.
So many unknowns. People just don't disappear. Or do they, in this case? So let's just go over some key points of the case.
Okay, so she was last seen February 9th, 2004. So it was just a 20-year anniversary since she's been missing. She was a college student at UMass, a nursing student who was 21 years old and had a good relationship with her family. On February 9th, Maura packed up her bags, withdrew the money from her savings account, and purchased a bunch of alcohol, and then she got into her car and started driving. She emailed her professors saying she wouldn't be in class because there was a death in the family. So, and there was not a death in the family.
No,
there
wasn't.
There was
no
issue. There were,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there was nothing going on. It was very strange, so.
Yeah, and then so nearly 3 hours later, she's in New Hampshire, and a resident called 911 to report a single car accident in Haverhill, New Hampshire. So Maura's car slid, hit a snowbank, and landed in a ditch. So it's, you know, midwinter, it's dark, snowy, you're on like this country highway.
Oh gosh, yeah.
She was at the scene of the accident when the first and second 911 calls were made. However, by the time police got there, she was nowhere to be found. I think it's been said that there was like maybe 5 to 8 minutes between the calls and then the police arriving. So it was very short.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a lot of time in between.
And was the car like severely damaged? Like, was it a bad accident or was it just
Okay. But she had a lot of problems with her car in general. And I think we'll get to that.
Go ahead.
So to this day, it is still unclear what happened to her in that time frame. Did she get picked up by a passerby or did she wander off into the woods? Her family thinks it was foul play. But if she did wander into the woods, they would have seen footprints. But supposedly there wasn't any when police were there. Or they would have found her body and her belongings.
Yeah. So when the police arrived at the scene, her car door was locked and there was a box of wine in the back seat. There were no belongings or footprints anywhere, like Ashley said. Something weird, there was a like a little towel, like a rag that was in her tailpipe.
Yeah.
I heard something about this and her dad explained that away in a documentary.
Right.
She was having issues with the muffler and he was afraid she was going to get pulled over by the police.
So they used it to like absorb sound.
I think so. But it was also disproven that if she put it in there, it wouldn't have stayed because of the pressure coming out of the muffler.
So okay.
They're not sure how it would have stayed in there.
So the dad is suspicious.
I don't know. People say that he is, but I don't know.
That's suspicious to me. All right, carry on. What else? What else do I need to know? I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to solve
this. Please do. Please.
So oftentimes in missing persons cases, you look at what was going on in the person's life leading up to the disappearance. So there were some things going on in her life before she decided to take off. She was involved in a stolen credit card. She was in a car accident driving her dad's car, and that had some extensive damage to it. And just a few days before she disappeared, she was working at her security job on campus, and she just burst into tears on the job, and her boss walked her back to her dorm, and she never really confided in her as to what was wrong.
I did hear that didn't she have a phone call, and that's why she burst into tears, and she said was my sister.
But
she never elaborated.
Have we heard from the sister?
I have seen an interview with the sister.
And she hasn't.
She
is she the one that has just like the podcast? Is it Julie? Because Julie just started a podcast too.
Don't think it was.
Because she has multiple siblings.
Yeah,
there's a lot of siblings.
A much older sister that was an alcoholic and had problems or something. I don't know if it's drug and alcohol or one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But they thought that was what it had to do with because her sister was dealing with some rehab issues or something, and that's why she was upset because of her sister.
Yeah.
I don't think that her sister ever clarified that was what it was about, though. So,
just some odd things.
So what do you guys think happened? What is your theory?
So there are some theories.
Yeah, so Butch Atwood was this bus driver, and I think he drove a school bus.
He did,
just a school bus, and he was driving past when she was stopped, and he had asked her if she needed a ride, and she said, no, I've already called AAA, and he didn't believe her because he knew there was no cell phone service in the area, so he went back to his house. Was it around the corner, I think?
It was, yeah. He lived really close, and he was the second 911 caller.
Okay.
So he went back and called 911, and so a lot of people thought maybe he picked her up.
Right. I mean,
I don't
it's the obvious suspect.
Yeah.
He was actually, though, the last person to ever see her alive. But I thought I saw somewhere that he came back, though, when the police were still there. Did you ever
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. So that's why people were like, well, he couldn't have done anything. Because if he would have came back to the scene.
Right.
Or is he trying to trick them into thinking he was innocent by showing
back
up?
That's true, too. Or if he had her.
Minded.
Yeah.
Maybe I am. Maybe I am a criminal. Oh, no.
We're going to get Ashley to like true crime after this.
I'm anxious because I want to know the answer to it. I can't live like this.
It's a rabbit hole you go down to.
All right. What else?
What other theories?
What else is there? Abducted by a total stranger that somebody just, you know, drove up and snatched her and ran off. There's also a theory that she was driving with someone, like in tandem, or like there was another car behind her and she ditched the car and went.
That was my first thought.
And took off to Canada.
Yeah.
The fact that she took money out and like hightailed it out of there. makes me think that she was plotting something. Yeah. So she was already up to something. And what are the chances that while she was up to something, somebody else was up to something?
I know. Do you know? I'm like, it's just like, to get picked up by someone. Like, what are the chances of that?
I mean, it could happen. Travelers might take the opportunity as it's given to them.
But that's just, I don't know. It seems
that
too
was my
easy.
First thought when she took money out. I'm like, she's up to something.
But she also did her homework for school, like that right before she left. She turned in her homework. So why turn in your homework?
She's a good student.
School.
She wants to, like, maybe she thought she was coming back. Maybe she thought she was taking
a
weekend away.
Yeah, I think she was just going to go for a weekend.
That's what, because she, I think they had made, she had made plans. Like, she called some kind of lodge or something.
But,
she was having problems with her boyfriend.
Where was he? Where does he live?
He was in
Texas.
Yeah, wasn't
so
he
driving
like in
the
army
way.
Or, okay. I know he was in,
I think the two of them were
military.
In the Naval Academy, and she got kicked out of the Naval Academy, and that's why she was at UMass.
Oh, that was West Point.
Or West Point, yes. Thank you.
Because her sister went to West Point, too.
Yeah. So, why'd she ditch the wine if she was, like, plotting something? Is that a red herring?
Well, they found wine. Well, she left the wine, but they think that she was drinking while she was driving, and that's what they think.
Well,
that's
what
accident. I think. I think that she took off because she didn't want them to see her getting, because then that would be a felony.
Yeah.
Because she had some other issues that Ashley talked about. So then she wouldn't be able to complete her nursing school. So she ran off so they wouldn't find out she was drinking and driving.
Right.
And then she was abducted.
I don't know. Yeah. See, I think that she ran down the road and then hid somewhere and waited for them to leave. And then was going to maybe take her car and go. But then she got lost maybe because she was drunk and, you know,
Something
and then just succumbed to the elements.
But they never found her.
They didn't.
Did they? They searched, I'm assuming,
for
a long time.
But she could have gotten far away before she could succumb to anything. Who knows how far she got? I mean, if she was drinking.
Yeah, and she didn't want the bus driver to call police. Like,
see,
she, like, begged him, like, please don't call anyone because I called AAA. So she didn't want the police involved.
So you think there's no foul play?
I don't think there is, but there is one other theory that is really suspicious, too, which I wouldn't completely discount. So there was a sighting that there was a police officer on the scene, and it was in a specific car. But it was before anybody had called the police. And then when the police were actually called, there was no report of this other police officer being there.
Oh,
so there was a police car that came upon the scene.
Before.
He was the sheriff.
Okay.
He was the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And he never reported this to anybody. But there were eyewitnesses that saw that car with, because they have all, like, specific numbers on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They said that this sheriff has a history of drinking and driving while he is working, so they think that they're wondering if maybe he was drinking and driving and hit her, which caused her.
But wouldn't they see the damage on the car?
I don't know if they I mean, her car was kind of junky, and I don't think that it really got hit that bad.
Mm.
They're
mm-hmm.
saying she hit a snowbank. I mean, I don't know what a snowbank does to a car, but
so what does he say? I'm sure they've interviewed him.
He says, no,
you're crazy.
It wasn't me.
Right.
I wasn't there. It didn't happen.
Yeah, denies it.
But yeah, I guess there's other things that people have reported him. Or that.
And so do they think
suspicious.
That they could have snatched her up then?
Maybe. Yeah, because he didn't report that he was there, but there were eyewitnesses saying he was. And they think that maybe he hit her car. And there's also other people saying that they saw a man there with a cigarette helping her get stuff out of her trunk. So all the witnesses, I think there's three houses in the area, and they're all a little different, and they're all kind of not really reliable because their stories have changed, or maybe the police didn't take the whole report.
Because the first lady they called 911, she was just looking out her window.
And she saw it.
And she saw, like, there was an accident. Like, she couldn't even tell if Maura was a woman or a guy.
Okay.
So a lot going on.
This is 20 years ago. Is there any chance that she, like, wanted to escape her entire life and live a different identity, and she's out there somewhere carrying on?
Her family does not want to think that at all.
Because they think that they didn't have a bad relationship.
People can do that.
They can do that.
But for how long?
Right.
Her case was too big.
Yeah.
They had people that... There was a book written about it, and it was a terrible book.
The James Renner.
I read it too.
And
I did read it, and it was...
His theory was the one driving with someone in tandem, and she's now in Canada.
Mm. And he talked to people up there, but they weren't reliable witnesses. Mm. So
I didn't buy that.
Basically, everything in his book was unexplained.
Hearsay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm distraught about Maura. Ashley, you said you were going to talk about another case, about the book that you're reading now?
Yes. So this one hits close to home. Amy Mihaljevic, it's an unsolved abduction murder of a young girl who lived in Bay Village, which is a suburb of Cuyahoga Falls. It's a well-to-do community, and there is very low crime there up until this happened. This is quite an old case. We're dating back to October 1989. Her body was found 4 months after she was abducted in a field in Ashland County. Her killer is still at large. And I just can't believe that this case is still unsolved. It's a smaller community. You would think someone would have come forward by now, because this wasn't a crime of opportunity in the sense that it was like a spur of the moment. He kidnapped her. He had some connection to Bay Village. This is just a frustrating cold case. So let's get right into it. So Amy was only 10 years old at the time.
Oh my gosh.
Amy's school schedule, she had a 2:10 dismissal. So she would be home alone for an hour before her older brother would get home. His dismissal was at like 3-something, even though he was in 7th grade and she was in 5th. She was abducted on a Friday. So a day during that week, she got a phone call when she was home alone. So, okay, so right there, the person knew their family's schedule. He called before the older brother would be home. Or maybe it was just luck. But the unknown male said he needed help buying a gift for her mother, who had recently received a promotion at work. However, her mother did not receive a promotion. She had just gone from part-time to full-time.
So, how do we know that she got the phone call?
She told friends at school.
Okay.
She did confide in a few people. He convinced Amy to meet him at the Village Shopping Center Friday afternoon. The offer was a ruse, and for whatever tragic reason, Amy took the bait. Two classmates did see a white male in his 30s at the shopping center approach Amy. He put his hand on her shoulder and led her through the parking lot. Amy did tell one of her friends that she was meeting someone to buy a gift for her mom. Ironically enough, a Bay Village police officer presented to Amy's class that same day about strangers.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and it did not sway her decision to still meet up with him.
I mean, it just goes to show you, kids just feel like they have some kind of, you know, an adult asks them to do something, they have to do it.
Right? Yeah.
Even if they know it, maybe something's wrong or it's not.
And in the book that I'm reading, like, this is really sad because he's interviewing, like, Amy's friend and, like, the friend's mom. Mm. And the mom even said she's, like, she would do anything for her mom.
Aww.
Yeah. So she probably just felt like, yes, I have to get, you know, this gift for her. So it's just so sad.
It's really sad.
Amy did call her mom once when she was with the killer. He let her call her mom. That was her and her brother's routine, to call their mom to let her know they were home.
The killer was like trying to like put her off the scent, like to make sure everything was okay.
Right. So she was definitely with him when she made the phone call.
Okay.
So two girls from neighboring towns received similar phone calls, and the man on the line claimed to be their mother's boss, and he told them she was getting a promotion and he needs help picking out a gift. So he asked them if they'd like to go pick out a gift with him after school one day. He was friendly at first until he heard her tell her brother about the surprise, and he got angry and said she was going to ruin it. The girl told him, "Never mind, I can't go." So
that's a very interesting piece.
So once investigators learned about this, they thought for sure it was Amy's murderer, which, makes sense, because who gets those kind of phone calls?
Right.
But obviously they couldn't prove that, you know, who the person was. So then there was a need to find a commonality between the girl and Amy. And what they found was that they all visited the Lake Erie and Science Center, and there was a log book. So possibly the murderer was a volunteer there and took the log sheet and started calling girls. Which,
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry.
So... her body was never found.
It was.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
In a field, right? In a cornfield or something.
Okay, so they found her body, but they haven't been able to find any evidence.
Yeah. No, so all that, investigators are still hopeful that this green homemade curtain that was found near her body could help solve the case.
Oh.
It's unique since it's homemade, and it was first a blanket and then turned into a curtain.
Oh, wow.
And Amy's hair and her dog's hair was found on it.
But nobody else's DNA.
Or they have, like, very small amount of DNA. They're hoping that, you know, how DNA advances, yeah, that maybe, yeah, it could come up with, like, a profile eventually. But they don't have, like, a substantial amount.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
I mean, this guy might not even be alive now. What was that, 30 years ago?
Right.
You know, so it's...
Mm-hmm. And they don't think that it was, like, a serial killer.
Oh.
Like, no, the FBI profiler. He feels like this was, like, his first... Mm. Time doing this in his last.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why do they think that? Just because,
I guess,
the way it was
done?
The nature
of it.
Was it, like, brutal?
They didn't find her for a few weeks,
oh,
right?
Oh, right. Yeah,
or
a few months.
Or something.
Yeah.
So they, yeah.
He, like,
it was
spent
like
time
February.
With her.
Yeah, so he kept her. I think he held on to her for a little while.
Wow.
I don't know how long.
Was there any, like, sign of, like, assault?
That came up inconclusive.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are your theories? I mean, there's really not much to go off of.
There isn't.
Somebody.
That's the thing. And it's, I mean, just someone that's familiar,
yeah,
with the community. And that's why I'm just, like, baffled that this hasn't been solved. Like,
yeah,
they have a composite sketch of him, and you just think that
how
someone
do you get a,
would,
who did
like,
they get a composite sketch from?
I think from, like, the kids that were at the village shopping center that day.
And obviously
her.
They interviewed everybody that worked at that science center.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But even the kids that gave the sketch, I think one of them said he had glasses and one said he didn't.
Mm.
You know, so
they're 10-year-olds.
Right, they're young kids. I mean.
Yeah, so they're not real reliable, but, or even, I don't know, just someone that, like, has known about this for a while or something,
mm-hmm,
that would,
yeah,
just, like,
talk.
Yeah,
wow,
like the guilt would just make them.
Well, you would think.
Yeah.
You'd think, but
mm-hmm,
then again... We're not talking like rational human beings now, are we?
That's true.
Right.
No, not at all.
Well, now I'm concerned.
now where, you're invested
now. Now where do I go from here? Now that I have this information and I don't know who did these things. Like, now we just move on.
You go out for a road trip up to northern Ohio and see if you can figure it out.
And then what? I can't possibly have any more information than the people who are investigating this. But now it's inside. I know it. I'm seeking an answer. I need closure.
We will all solve this.
Yeah, we also have no closure, and that's why it continues to intrigue us,
mm-hmm,
I think, because there is none.
And they keep making documentaries and things because there's new information or it's just a new perspective?
Both,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
I think so.
Both.
Like,
yeah,
the same case can be,
mm-hmm,
viewed
and just
over
to get
and over
the,
again.
The case out there again, you know, people forget.
Yeah.
And give it new life.
That's true. All right, now that I am thoroughly disturbed, I guess we should move on to what we are looking forward to reading. If anybody has anything a little bit more hopeful, cheery, perhaps, anything?
Help me out.
Anybody?
Well,
like, I will keep
well, I don't
the disturbed
know that
going.
Yeah, mine.
I'm actually looking forward to reading Vera Wang's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers by Jesse Q. Sutanto.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That
so
one looks good.
That's, I think it, you know, I read the synopsis and I think it's kind of like a cozy mystery.
Mm-hmm.
It reads a little bit like a cozy, but a little different. There's an older lady that lives above a tea shop. And there's a death that happens in the tea shop. I don't know. It's probably murder. I don't know that if it said that in the synopsis, but somebody dies in the tea shop late at night and he has a flash drive in his hand. So she calls the police, but then takes the flash drive and, you know, goes on to investigate her.
Oh, so she's taking
tampering
it
with
herself.
The evidence.
Definitely,
oh,
yeah. She sounds like a shady, but also super fun. So
yeah,
I'm looking.
And she's like an older lady that
just lives alone above a tea shop.
Hmm.
Like my dream.
Right. Yeah.
To come across somebody with a flash drive and
would you take it?
Oh, I would absolutely take it.
Because
then
you
I'd
probably
call Ashley and we'd investigate.
Because you probably live in some small town where you can't trust the police because like bumbling and, you know, like senile or something.
Right.
Like,
so just
feel like that's often the case in these like cozy mysteries where it's
absolutely.
The police are doing their best, but they just happen to be really bad at their job.
Yeah, so the baker needs to figure it out. And then she falls in love with the police chief. So,
so he's maybe not
always
that bad.
Yeah, but he still obviously can't do his job because he needs the baker to do his job. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's
we all work better
case.
As a team now,
yeah.
Don't we? Cute. Yeah, I've been wanting to read that one too. So I do like a cozy mystery, even though I don't like to get too deep into the true crime or the like actual thrillers, just because I sometimes feel like there's enough stress in my real life. Cozy mysteries are kind of the fun and the intrigue without the stress and all of that. All right, Ashley, what are you looking forward to reading?
I'm on the fence with this one, but I think I'm going to attempt to read it. I'm going to try it, at least. A Mystery of Mysteries, The Death and Life of Edgar Allan Poe by David Dowitziak. I wouldn't say I'm a huge Poe fan. His work was creepy, but I do find him interesting. So this book looks into his mysterious death, as it was bizarre and painful, basically something that would be in one of his own tales. So over the years, there has been a lot of speculation about the cause of his death. A new theory has emerged that could prove the cause of Poe's death. So the narrative alternates between his desperate last months of life and his brief just overall life.
So should I know how he died? I don't think I know.
There was something suspicious surrounding it. Didn't he?
Yeah, he like walked around for 3 days like in a desperate state and like very sickly. And
yeah.
And so, then he just died.
Right? Yeah. And he was only 40.
Okay.
Don't think. Mm-hmm. I know there was something. I can't remember. I've seen stuff on that too. Yeah, another suspicious one.
So. Yeah. So, I don't know.
For the next
podcast.
Well, keep just something depressing.
Just
to
pass
keep
the
it
time,
going.
Something light.
Yeah, right?
Well, you'll have to keep me posted. If there's some closure in that, I'd be interested. But, you know, don't give me another open-ended one. Yeah. I can't take it. Okay, I just checked out a copy of The Arsonist City by Hala Alien. This is the selected title for a community-wide reading experience to honor Arab American Heritage Month in April. This is a story of a family spread across the globe in Beirut, Brooklyn, Austin, and California. There is a Syrian mother, a Lebanese father, and 3 American children, all having lived a life of migration. Still, they've always had their ancestral home in Beirut and the complicated, messy family love that binds them. Following his father's recent death, Idris, the family's new patriarch, has decided to sell the family home, bringing everyone back to Beirut to unite against him in a fight to save the house. They all have secrets, lost love, bitter jealousies, abandoned passions, some deep-set shame that distance has helped smother. In a city smoldering with the legacy of war, an ongoing flow of refugees, religious tension, and political protest, those secrets ignite, imperiling the fragile ties that hold this family together. So it's said to be teeming with wisdom and warmth, and I'm actually really looking forward to reading this one.
I mean, there's a lot going on there, but it's like the house is almost bringing them together, even though they want to sell it.
Yeah, or, and maybe confronting a lot of things that they've kind of abandoned. We'll see. I'm looking forward to this. There's a bunch of copies in our system, so I'm hoping that it will make for a good discussion. All right, a great roundup of books to look forward to. Thank you so much, Lindsay, for being here.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for inviting me. This is fun.
This has been Ashley.
And Ashley.
And Lindsay.
Thanks for listening.
Happy reading.
Thank you for joining us this month at PLYMC's Library Anywhere podcast. Make sure to visit our website at www.libraryvisit.org, where you can always find more great things the library offers. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. Also, check out our Instagram feed or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at PLYMC. You can also find us on TikTok at ThePLYMC. And be sure to tune in next month for our next episode, and thanks for listening.